Welcome to the Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. Today, we return to the scene of December's Going Home, Stories of Returning. First, featured storyteller Matt Erpelding spends one exposed Christmas on a return climb in Zion.
Okay, so 1999, I was 23 years old, just to turn 23 years old, and I was offered my first professional job at California State University, Chico. And prior to that, I had really never considered leaving Idaho again after I'd moved here for college, because it was the center of my universe. And I was offered this job to be the assistant director of the outdoor program at Chico State, which is called Adventure Outings, which for me was a dream job. Think about it. I was going to be leading trips at the party school. It wins party school every year in some magazine. All kinds of hot co-eds. I'm this 23-year-old mountain guide jock. It was exciting. So I pack up all my stuff into a Jeep with no trailer, and someone could have ridden with me. But I drive to Chico, and I get there, and what I find out is that job involves a lot of time behind a computer. So what I thought was going to be this crazy wild, always outside, always looking cool, always looking slender, was like a weight gaining session the first 6 months that I was there. And so by June of 1999, I had probably typed 7,000 pages of documents that nobody ever read. So I was beginning to debate, why am I doing this again? Because it's Adventure Outings. And began to second guess myself, kind of beginning to long for the days when I lived in my car, climbed a bunch of walls in Yosemite, and started to have like this midlife crisis thing. And the next vacation that I was going to have was Christmas, because school gets out at that time, and so no students would be around. So I was going to skip Christmas with my family, which for a lot of people, there's a lot of good reasons to skip Christmas with your family. I'll come to that in a second. But the other thing was, I was going to go down to Zion National Park in southern Utah, and I was going to solo moonlight buttress, which is a classic big wall climb. It's 10 pitches. Most two-partied groups take 2 days on it. They sleep one night on the wall. My plan was to do it by myself, solo, on Christmas, and do it in 2 days. My plan was so flawed. So, take a step back. So I was going to do this over Christmas, and the reason I was going to do it over Christmas is because I really didn't want to go home. And I didn't want to go home for a lot of reasons. The first is my dad and I are polar opposites. He's a great father, but we're polar opposites. So much so that in high school, my dad was a boxer, and I was a gymnast. So when my dad would want to work out, he'd say, let's go down and hit the heavy bag. And I'd be like, let's go do dive rolls and cartwheels. And which was awkward for sure for him, probably more so than me. And the other thing was, my mom kind of always acted as the oil that kept us from rubbing each other raw. And so she was kind of like the tendered spirit that made everything good. And then my dad and I, when we were by ourselves, wanted to kill each other. So, but kind of abruptly in 1991, my mom passed away. Very abruptly. She woke up. I happened to be in Idaho at a race. I was a runner. And she woke up, complained of a headache, and passed away. Like, click. And basically, that took the oil that kept my dad and I from boxing, for all intents and purposes, it took it out of the engine and kind of ran it dry. So my dad and I kind of argued a lot. And so that was a really good reason not to go home, because we argued about everything, in particular politics. So this year I decide, you know, I'm gonna go do this, because I'm having a midlife crisis. I'm only 23. I've got this job that sits me behind a computer the whole time. I've gained 10 pounds in a year. And I don't really want to go home for Christmas. So I jump in my Jeep, and I start driving on December 21st from Chico, California to Zion National Park. And that just kind of cruises you through Nevada. Spent a couple nights in a couple Walmart parking lots. I'm not proud of it, but they will let you sleep there. No questions asked. And at the time, I had this steady paycheck that I thought was steady. And I also had all this debt from college that I was trying to pay off. So right before I left for this trip, I paid off two giant credit cards bills that I'd probably used to, like, get myself to South America to do a climbing trip or something with little to no judgment in terms of how I was going to pay for that. So I start driving. I drive across the country, and I get to Zion National Park on December 22nd, December 23rd, somewhere around there. And I look up at this wall, which is about 1,000 feet, and it's roughly 900 and something feet, but let's call it 1,000. Sounds so much bigger. I've got a camera, and I've got, like, what's called a haul bag with me, and a haul bag is what you keep all your supplies in while you're going to be on the wall. It's like a potato sack with shoulder straps, and it was really heavy. It was so heavy, in fact, that I would have to walk about 30 yards at a time, and then I would sit down, and then I would get up and walk 30 yards at a time to get to the base of this climb. Not to mention, I hadn't thought through crossing the Virgin River in December, so this crossing was like the most frigid thing I'd ever done, and I also had never soloed a wall before, and I didn't actually read up on how to do that. Because here's the thing about mountain climbers, we'll figure it out. So I'm thinking, all right, I've got a camera, I got a haul bag, I got all these ropes, all this metal, and I'm ready to do this. I figured that it was going to be so awesome that I would have, like, a "It Was Huge and I Was Awesome" slideshow when I got back to Chico, more co-eds interested in hanging out with me, all that. So I cross this river, and I get up to the base of the climb, and my plan was to spend one night on this thing. So I had about 2 gallons of water and a couple cans of tuna fish, and for Christmas, I brought 6 donuts with me. I love donuts. They're delicious. I still do. And I'm kind of getting ready. I'm getting ready, and this other climber comes up, and he'd done a bunch of walls, and he's like, "I'm going to do Lunar Ecstasy. It's right next to you." I was like, "Oh, cool. We'll wave to each other and everything." And so he takes off, and he clearly had been climbing walls by himself because he was moving super fast, and I wasn't. So the first pitch for me was like the most horrifically scary thing I'd ever done, because at any moment I was convinced I was going to fall and hit the ground, which I imagined that would kill me. And so I get the first pitch done, and I am gripped with fear, and I'm thinking this is going to end badly because I am so scared right now. But my plan was, I'm not going down. I'm not turning around. This is what I'm doing for Christmas. This is my gift to mountaineering. Because everyone has to give a gift to somebody, and that's what I was going to do. So I get up, and I finally get to the top of the second pitch. Now, this is a 10-pitch climb, so if I was going to do it in 2 days, I kind of needed to get 5 done in the first day. But I got 2 done, and it was dark when I got to the top of the second pitch. So at the top of the pitch actually was a ledge very similar to this stage. It was a pretty big ledge, so it was felt very safe. And so I set up my cot, which you hang off the anchor and you sleep in. And I was digging through my haul bag, and I couldn't wait. But what I had noticed is that when I was getting ready to climb, I had dropped the donut bag in the sand at the base of the climb. So my donuts not only had probably the best frosting ever, but they also had this layer of orange sand on every donut, and I was just like, ah, dessert is ruined. So I opened up a can of tuna fish, and I hadn't thought through the fact that tuna fish is not good at all, ever. But it's really not good cold in the winter on a climb in Zion, and I have this can of tuna fish open, and I'm eating it slowly, kind of like mulling it. And all of a sudden, these like droplets fall down on top of me, and I think, oh gosh, it's going to rain on me. And I look up, and it is a perfectly starry night. The moon is out. There's a portal edge above me, and I thought, wow, this whole thing is so cool. This is awesome, beautiful. I hope that this storm is west of me and isn't going to come back here, because these little raindrops are making me nervous. So I finish my tuna, and I break into my sand-encrusted glazed donut, which is delicious and has like rainbow sprinkles on it for Christmas and everything. And another batch of droplets fall on me, and I think, oh, and I look up at the portal edge, and I go, that dude is pissing on me. And so I yell up at him, and I'm like, dude, you are totally pissing on me. And the expletive that I use rhymes with truckin', because I was like, whoa, Who expects to spend Christmas with urine on them? So, you know, he apologizes. He's like, I'm very sorry. I didn't know you were down there. But you know that he was, like, kind of sitting on his ledge just giggling, like, I just pissed on a dude twice. I know he was. I never saw him again. I hope never to. So the next day goes fairly well. And the whole time I'm kind of reflecting on this relationship I had with my dad. And my dad's great now that we're older. He's really great. But I kept reflecting on him and how he did not understand me. I was up there taking all this risk, dealing with all this fear, you know, being hardcore. Well, he was at home playing golf. I guess after you box, you golf the rest of your life. So we just didn't understand each other. And the second day went fairly well. The haul bag got caught a couple times. Now, the way you solo a wall is you climb the pitch with your rope, fix it, descend the pitch, and then climb the pitch again. So this was a 10-pitch climb, but because I had to climb every pitch twice, it was 20 pitches, which is why the two-day plan was really broken. And I hadn't thought that through. So 20 pitches over 10 pitches. The topo says it's 10 pitches. So I'm thinking about him, and I get to the top of the fifth pitch that day, and I'm like, all right, good. I'm 2 days behind schedule now because I should have been at the top of the fifth pitch yesterday, and at this pace, it's going to take me 2 more days to get off this thing. And I'm noticing my hands are starting to get sore. Like, I can't really make a fist any longer because I've been, like, death gripping everything because the fear. Jeez. So the next day I get up to the top of the eighth pitch, but the problem between the fifth and the eighth pitch was this chimney that took me 4.5 hours to go 25 feet because I'm short, which I blame on my mother. And so I get to the top of the eighth pitch and I am, like, totally frightened. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, he doesn't understand, that's why I'm here for Christmas. And I'm thinking about him falling asleep in his chair at 7:30 at night after my mom died. And for some reason, something dawned on me. I was on this route by choice, which means I was accepting fear by choice for some sick, sadistic reason. My dad accepted the loss of his wife and the fear that encompassed that without choice. So here I am sitting on this wall thinking I'm a badass. And I think, actually, I'm not. He's the badass. He raised 3 of us with no help on his own. And that was pretty impressive because I'm alive on the eighth pitch. So now the goal is to get the heck off of this climb. So the next day I decide I'm out of here. And I start climbing and I'm like, I'm out of here really slowly. So I ditch my bags and decide I'm going to climb to the top. I'm just going to go for it and leave my haul bag. So I go for it, climb to the top and leave my haul bag. And tie the rope off and decide I'm going to get my bag tomorrow. I'm going to go down and get a hotel room. And so I hike down, go to my Jeep, drive to the nearest motel and say, give me a motel room. And they go, okay, give me your credit card. And I go, okay. And they go, no, no hotel room for you. You don't have any money because you bounced 5 checks across Nevada because you paid off a credit card bill. So now I don't have any money. And if you remember right, my sleeping bag is at the top of the eighth pitch, and I'm on the bottom of the canyon floor on Christmas. And so I zip myself into a duffel bag in the back of my Jeep, which, again, only could have happened because I'm short, and so I blame my mother for that. So I'm in my duffel bag sleeping, and the next day I'm like, I really wanted to go home. My plan was to race home to see my dad and to actually just say, you know what, Dad, you did a damn good job at raising us. But I don't have any money, so now the next phone call is that I got to call my dad and ask for money. So I'm sitting there and I'm debating this, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to call him. I'm not going to call him. I'm going to figure this out. And I'm sitting in the Zion Lodge, super dirty. And on my hike down, after I finally got my stuff and hiked down, this old couple found me. And bear in mind that when you're on a wall for 5 days, you're pooping into plastic bags. And so I was just like kind of duct taping them and putting them back in the haul bag. So I didn't smell good, literally. I was carrying like a honey pot on my back. And so I'm these couple, they take a couple photos of me. And I'm like, thank you so much for that. And they give me my camera and I hike down. And I'm sitting in the lodge and I'm literally broke and I can't go home. And I really would like to go home. And this old man who saw me walks up to me and hands me $20. And he says, "It's Christmas. Go upstairs and get some dinner." And I looked at that $20 and I looked at him and I went, "Okay." And as soon as he walked away, I went and got $20 worth of gas and drove straight to Salt Lake City, where I had two friends, one friend who I could crash with and the next friend who was arriving by plane the next day and I was going to pick him up. And the first thing I said to him was, "Hey, it's really good to see you. Could I borrow like $200? So I did get home for New Year's and I did get to say thank you to my dad. And that was probably one of the best years of my life because it was the first time I realized what a parent can do when given no other options. And I thought that was very impressive. So, thank you.
Next, we hear from Story Slammers Tom Lloyd and Jason Hudson, who run on empty and under misdirection on a return trail home. When paired with Matt's, this story demonstrates exactly what it's like to go home. Because no matter how much time you spend recreating your identity, when you return home, your old friends, and all those old stories, remind you what you're really made of.
My story, actually, you can just duck. My story actually involves, the reason I wanted to get up here today is my story involves our first speaker of the day. He is prides himself on being an adventurer, as you heard from his story.
Nice. Well,
Matt and I.
Hot seat, buddy.
He is in the hot seat. Matt and I. A little backstory. Matt and I met each other through running. This past year, Matt in college was a collegiate runner. I know many of his teammates are here today, and I was as well. We met here in Boise after we'd both retired from that career. And I was training for my first marathon. If you have ever trained for a marathon, you know it's a series of progressions of building up to 12 miles and then back down to 8 and then up to 16 and down to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I needed a good long run that was about 17 miles. And I got a couple of friends, Jason being one of them, Matt being the other, and then my girlfriend's little brother. And we decided we'll drive up to Bogus. We had a nice plan set forth. We'd start up at Bogus. We'd have two cars, one at the bottom, one at the top. We'd run down. It'd be perfect. So we set out on this run, which was, like I say, fully set forth. But Matt, being the adventurer that he is, decided, this plan is no good. No. We need to completely divert from all preset plans. I have a better idea. Now, Matt, where does this trail go? Trust me, I know it. Now, Matt, between Josh and I, we brought one water bottle, and is this going to be okay? Now, bear in mind, this was, when was this, July?
July.
We set out early in the morning. It was 6 or 7 a.m., and so anyway, we drove all the way up to Bogus. All the way up to the base of the ski hill, and Matt said, no, this isn't right. It was at that point that I think all of us started to think, Matt doesn't really have a plan here. Matt, what are we getting into? And so we descended the hill a little bit. Everybody knows where Bogus is, I assume. We descended a little bit and just pulled off on the road, and he was like, "Yeah, this is it right here." I'm sure, Matt. Thank you for this. And we set out, and it wasn't more than
a minute and a half
down the trail that we run into what appears to be a small reservoir. And Matt looks at it, and he don't worry, this isn't that big or deep. And he's straight on through it. And the rest of us kind of, all right, Matt, you're a little crazy. And we edge around the side. And then, so that was a minute and a half. At about 3 minutes is when we ran into the guy with the gun. Matt, maybe we should go back this way a little bit. And so about 5 minutes is where we lost the trail entirely. But keep in mind, Matt is an experienced adventurer, so we were in good hands. Until about 6 minutes. And then at 6 minutes, we had decided, okay, there's no hope in going down, because look at that, down. It's terrible. Up is clearly the way to go here. So it was intended to be a nice 17-mile run downhill, turned into a bushwhacking adventure through thorns that could literally rip your eye out. And we did that from about minutes 6 through 106. When we got to the top, we found the nice ridge road up at the top that runs along Bogus, and we all stopped to check our wounds. Most of us were bleeding from places underneath our shorts. And Matt himself took off his shoes and socks, which, keep in mind, he'd just run through the reservoir, the Bogus Basin Reservoir, and he had blisters already that were about that big, and I'm not kidding. They were disgusting. So we continued on our path, and that led us down the road and then down a nice trail that I admit was very, very pleasant run. It took us about another 45 minutes down along a trail. It was nice shaded. We had multiple stream crossings, which the rest of us attempted to avoid. Matt, with his wet shoes already, was, oh, what the hell, I'll go through them. And that's about the time when the heat of the day occurred. We ran out of water, and we ran out of trees. So we were all confident that we were going to be okay, because Matt, again, is an experienced adventurer who would not lead us astray. Now, and I'll wrap this up very quickly. The next several minutes involved, and maybe Jason feels like he did that day because he hasn't said much, but the next several minutes, or this next several hours, I guess you would say, involved, at one point, Josh and I, the person who was with us, he became pale white and just stared at me and said, I can't do this anymore. And so I said, okay, we need to get home. But Matt, being the experienced adventurer that he is, decided, no, let's turn back up towards the mountain. And this is where I finally had to put my foot down and say, no, Matt, you guys can do what you need to do, but we're going to go towards the road. By the time we got to the road, it was maybe 100 feet, and it took Josh, my poor companion, about 10 minutes to cross that 100 feet. In the meantime, Matt, being the experienced adventurer that he is, did in fact turn back up trail. Unfortunately, Jason was similarly dehydrated to Josh, but just not as smart. And oh no, I'll go with Matt. That sounds like a good idea.
I think this is why Tom decided to drag me up here, is because at this point our stories diverged a little bit. And as he's already indicated, I was delirious enough at this point that I thought it was a better plan to continue on back to the car rather than take the shortcut down to the road.
Because Matt's an experienced adventurer. I don't know if I mentioned that. Yes.
And stick my thumb out and get home the slightly easier way. So as Tom and Josh head off down towards the road, towards what's most likely going to be a safe return home.
Civilization.
I continue following our guide as the day gets hotter, down the hill, across the next creek, which he decided at that point he was desperate enough to get on his hands and knees and drink out of.
Now, bear in mind, I just have to interrupt for a moment, because nearly 50 feet before we diverged trails, we'd actually seen a large herd of cattle on that same stream, so
the implications being obvious there. But, yeah, so we continue. I am getting obviously weaker and more delirious weaving around the trail. I have Matt following along ahead of me, encouraging me as best he can, like that, actually literally clapping his hands and saying, come on, buddy, come on, come on. I felt like a Labrador. And we finally get within sight of the car. We are, in fact, going to make it home. And I have gotten too tired to pick my feet up and trip over within sight of the car, a rock about the size of a nickel, and slide 10 feet on my face to a halt, and pick myself up bloody and dusty, and wait for my buddy to come back and help me limp out the last 100 yards to the car. At which point we think we have made it home, and remember that we have no idea where Tom and Josh are.
But see, they were convinced when we diverged paths that their route was going to be the shorter path. In fact, I have, at this point, no idea where Josh is, because once we got to the road, I stuck him in a car with complete strangers. He could be dead. I don't know. My girlfriend's going to be very upset with me if he is. And these gentlemen went along their way. I got back to the car roughly 30 minutes before them. I was sitting in the shade, dying of thirst, because I didn't have the keys to the car. I didn't have any water. And so these guys finally showed up. All in all, the entire path took us about 6 hours. Should have been an hour and 45-minute run. But we were with an experienced adventurer. So we were okay with that. At the end of the day, everybody survived. It was frightening, but we all survived. And the moral of the story, the reason I wanted to tell you this, is that the theme tonight being everybody or is finding a way home. The fact of the matter is, most of the times when we find our way home, it's because we trusted somebody we shouldn't have. It was terrible. Never do that.
Thanks for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partners the Boise State Story Initiative and The Cabin, venue partner The Linen Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Story Night theme is by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for more stories from Going Home. Learn more at storystorynight.org.